Greetings from Off the Grids at BBS Radio, where there are exits from the world of corporate greed. You're tuned into the show that helps you climb off those grids of greed in the corporate state to achieve personal freedom in all parts of your life. The first part to consider is the political grid. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of personal revolution, aimed at awakening the vision of America that nourishes the spirit within, connecting all of us and making sure we arrive at that destination. You can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 888-228-4494. You can call us toll-free worldwide at 877-489-6350, or you can call us direct to 530-776-5154. The web of deceit that is the corporate grid of politics continues to spin its lies tonight. All of us have seen that happen in New Hampshire. Our guest will be talking about the rapidly approaching electoral contest in South Carolina. That will be a story you don't want to miss, so stay tuned. The grid of politics is there to keep you locked into a set of artificially created choices. All of the candidates except Ron Paul, Republican and Democrat, are actually running for the party of greed, Corporation Central. All belong to the CFR. All are vying for the opportunity of keeping you confused so that their employers, those same corporations, can continue to pick your pocket. Here you get the truth about that and about all the other grids, too. Political campaigns are intended to simulate the electoral process. It's orchestrated by the people of the grids. What you really see is a carefully planned television commercial or a movie. We have all been living in a world of illusion, one that's designed to suck you dry and keep you compliant. It's ugly and it is very intentional. Off the Grid shows you all the exits, of which politics is just one. We need to take back control to the local level, and that will be another phase of the revolution. So help us help you. Ask your local station to stream us into your local area. To do that, contact us at bbsradio.com. Now, my blog site is titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom and is conveniently located at theneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. And this week, the story at the top is titled 99 Ways to Steal Elections, the story of John Fund and Ron Paul. A curious partnering there, but you'll see why that makes sense when you go read it. Now, Ron Paul supporters are not only being loud now, they're changing politics and more than politics. The corporations have been getting sloppy. They're no longer on the offensive, and this is really exciting. Now, for the first time in our lifetimes, they are playing defense. Our guest tonight is an activist who will be talking about the revolution, so stay tuned. Now, first, a few little news items. The FBI wiretaps have become more frequent as a result of the Patriot Act. Although the government claims they were put in place to protect the American people, many see the practice as a violation of civil rights. No matter how one feels about the practice, it is about to happen less often. It seems the FBI has some difficulty paying their bills. Telephone companies have cut off FBI wiretaps that were being used to eavesdrop on suspected criminals, as the Bureau has repeatedly failed to pay phone bills on time. We could be happy for that. The Justice Department released an audit on Thursday that placed the blame for the lost connections on the FBI's lax oversight of money that is budgeted for undercover investigation. The audit also cited one program that was so poorly supervised, one agent was able to steal $25,000. The audit found that in at least one case, a wiretap used in a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act investigation was disrupted immediately due to untimely payment. Such taps are used in sensitive and secretive criminal investigations, while also allowing for eavesdropping on suspected terrorists or spies. Now let's remember 1955 and hope they don't pay their phone bills. We also found that late payments have resulted in telecommunications carriers actually disconnecting phone lines established to deliver surveillance results to the FBI, resulting in lost evidence, stated audit conducted by Inspector General Glenn A. Fine. Now, that's what you really call mixed news, like what they say, watching your mother-in-law go off the cliff in your new Cadillac, that sort of thing. There will be more. And now a couple little updates from the Ron Paul campaign. Kucinich endorses Ron Paul. Presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich endorsed Congressman Ron Paul, suggesting he may be exactly what the administration needs. Kucinich said the libertarian-leaning Republican can provoke debate on important issues to help America strengthen its position. When asked who he would choose as his running mate if nominated, the Democrat mentioned Ron Paul, describing him as a person of integrity, vision, and courage. He then pointed to the glass etching of the American Eagle in the U.S. House of Representatives and said the administration is also in need of two wings to fly, right and left. Kucinich said his foreign policy is very similar to that of Ron Paul's, adding that he does not want his party to just represent unilateral politics. Democrat candidate Dennis Kucinich, who opposed the war authorization bill 5 years ago, has repeatedly warned against launching a military attack on the Islamic Republic of Iran. And an addendum. Kucinich was there in the Secretary of State's office today, and, I quote, "I just called the SOS myself, and it is confirmed that because a candidate from both parties has requested a recount, all the candidate ballots will be recounted and made public. The recount is scheduled to start next Wednesday." That relating to the recount of the ballots in New Hampshire. And now, a few little thoughts for the week ahead. Right now, the Ron Paul revolution has reached a critical point in its development. The revolution itself is beginning to understand that its mission goes beyond the candidacy of Ron Paul, no matter how important that may be. Now, the realization that a new form for handling our affairs is coalescing has hitting individuals across the country and across the world. Cooperative efforts taking place outside the structure of shut up and get into line is now sinking in. Long live freedom, because the hierarchy, while still twitching, is now dead. They won't go quietly, but the final outcome of that issue has been decided. And in case you missed it, Fox News offered a debate last night in South Carolina. What they delivered was a carefully manicured attempt to eliminate from serious consideration the only candidate in this race who was not authorized by their employers, the same corporations. Ron Paul won despite Fox, despite the corporations, and despite his own management campaign, who remained the biggest blockage to his successful candidacy. Paul accomplished that through his focus on the foundational issues. Those are adherence to the Constitution and what it means to be a real Republican. At the same time, the call for a recount moved Linda Honeycutt, the granny warrior, to put up a chip-in that brought in enough money to pay for a plane ticket that put extremely minor presidential candidate Albert Howard of Ann Arbor, Michigan, on a plane for a date with the Secretary of State's office in New Hampshire, where the money was plunked down and paper signed. Now, thanks in part to the Kucinich endorsement and the base of right-left coalition, it is in place. Attempts to subvert that can now be expected to mount. There's a meeting place in the middle between the right and left, and we have a discussion now ongoing on the tools that we're going to use to create the future that we're all going to share. It's going to be interesting for all of us. And these events have changed the front in the world, in the war for freedom. The next will take a little bit more coordination, and that's going to be the ratification by affidavit of towns and voters in New Hampshire. So stay tuned to hear about that. And we can expect in that effort to see supporters of Kucinich and Obama signing on to help, because we've already found that from both of those groups, there's beginning to listen, there is beginning to be a dialogue, and we can expect from that dialogue that the coalition that we have seen will only grow. And in just a few days, another primary will confront us with the same problems and challenges. And in case you didn't know, that's South Carolina. The same primary where an ugly rumor inserted by John Fund in the year 2000 destroyed the campaign of John McCain in days. And Of course, as you know, if you listened to the debate last night, we now know that John McCain is no gentleman. South Carolina is now thinking about the issue of fraud, better now in advance than after the fact, huh? And our guest tonight is a super activist who has been working on making sure that South Carolina understands the choice it is about to make and what that choice means to America. So please welcome that super activist, Chris Lawton. Chris,
hey,
are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and I'm so glad that you could be with us, and I'm so glad that not only are you with us, but you're going to be able to give us a report on what happened last night in Myrtle Beach, because you were in the front row, right?
We were in the very front section, thankful for the Ron Paul campaign for getting us a ticket and getting us down there and hobnobbing with the neocons.
Well, that's fun, getting to hobnob with the neocons. And I'm sure you enjoyed every minute of it. Why don't we start out by, though, having you tell us a little bit about who you are, how you got into the Ron Paul campaign, and what this has all meant to you.
Wow. Well, it started actually in high school. I was involved very heavily with youth and government, where we took over the city, the state legislature for a weekend, and got very heavily involved with parliamentary rules, Robert's Rules of Order, and how the functioning ran. And that was in the late 70s. And then pretty much after that, I was busy, tied up, raising a family. Did get involved a little bit in the early 80s with the Federal Reserve and the CFR and the information regarding the New World Order that was coming about, and that's how I had first heard about Ron Paul. And then the last 25 or so years, we've been raising a family and just not really paying attention. A friend of mine sent me an email back on May 29th that indicated that Ron Paul was actually running for Republican presidential candidate. And as you know, the whole world turned upside down after that day, trying to make up for the 25 years that I let slip by. So we've been more of a conduit communication hub for the supporters and driving as many folks as we can to vote for Ron Paul here in the next on the 19th in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an exciting experience, and it's interesting, and I'd like to get into this a little bit, because I think it makes the whole, you know, sort of thing that we saw take place last night, it gives it a different perspective. Your response to what you saw, and you were sitting in the audience, was very different than that was seen by people who watched it on television, and different again than people who sort of witnessed it because they saw what had happened with Ron Paul actually winning the poll that took place afterwards.
That is true.
And so there's a vast difference in perception here about what happened. And what I'd like you to do is to tell our listeners what happened from your perspective while you were watching. How it impacted you.
Well, one of the things that, first of all, I want to tell you, the security was unbelievable. They had two metal detectors. They brought everybody through without cell phones, without cameras. It was very, very tight. Had a SLED agent sat directly to the left of me in, I guess, the Ron Paul row. But there was also a SLED agent in front of us where the Huckabee and the ex-governor of South Carolina, Beasley, was sitting. But while we were sitting there, I guess you would call it in the VIP section, got the undercurrent that while the debate was going on, if you call it that, that one, Fox News was very rude and very contrite with their questioning to Ron Paul, and that the snickering and the belittling was almost an embarrassment as any kind of actual bias of any, I mean, that this was supposed to be fair and leveraged reporting. Got me a little vocal. My wife was sitting next to me. She didn't want me to get arrested or thrown out, though we were about ready to, especially the question on electability really was out of line, especially for a man that's raised more money than anybody else up on the stage and has more military vote or donations than anybody else up on the stage. How dare Fox ask him about his electability? So, but inside the debate, the hall of debate, other than we had a good bunch of supporters up in the, I guess you'd call it the left rear quadrant, that was very vocal. It seemed we were on the downward slide of the ridicule and the Fox media bias was appearing to win out over Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Now I get out, we got out of the debate and I got calls and everyone was saying that we did great. So that was the difference between inside and the actual live version on TV. Though I have heard that the rebuttal to the electability question that Ron Paul answered brilliantly has now been cut out of the re-airing of the Fox debate. So you may want to catch that on YouTube.
Well, that's interesting, but it's exactly the sort of thing people, isn't it? That they would try to cut that out so that people simply wouldn't be able to know it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
it was carefully orchestrated to totally belittle Ron Paul.
And then, but you see, this is what I mean, and the remarks that I made, they have now come out of the closet because they used to at least try to create a semblance of fairness, and now they're panicking. Because it isn't working, and they don't understand why it's not working. And I really do think that that is the explanation. They simply don't know what to do because they're just, you know, their way of dealing, you know, with keeping us on the grids, the political grid, is now crumbling. So
well, the communication via the Internet, I think, is, Melinda, is one of the most powerful tools we have at our disposal, is that a lot of people are unplugging from the stream of media that's pouring out of the idiot box and the boob tube, and they're getting their information from the vast Internet and the sources that are out there.
Absolutely. So that must have been a little bit depressing, but then you went on to the party and you said that you were, you know, talking to people on your cell phone and they were telling you that it was fantastic.
Yeah, that it was it. Yeah, that we were winning and it was a great showing and one of the strongest. Matter of fact, I had two calls from people that wanted to get yard signs that were converted Ron Paul supporters after watching the debate.
And not that many people actually rewatched them, so that probably isn't going to be like locking the barn after the horses escaped for them. So I guess we can be happy about that, too. So how do you feel? You know, and then afterwards, you went to the victory party, so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, there was a tremendous restaurant, the Liberty Steakhouse, in Myrtle Beach. And prior to that, actually about 3 o'clock that afternoon, they had the general manager, and I sure wish I'd gotten her name, and we'll definitely need to send her a thank you card. She went out and put Ron Paul signs everywhere. And the fact that it was a Liberty restaurant made a little bit of fun to it also. But the when by the time Ron got out of there, out of the final and from what I heard too, he didn't even get interviewed by Fox afterwards, which is normally what they do. And also, Melinda, just backtrack a little bit. Every candidate on that stage, when another candidate mentioned somebody else, Fox made sure that they had 30 seconds to rebut that other candidate. Ron Paul was never afforded that opportunity on any situation where his name was mentioned by another candidate. No 30-second rebuttal was allowed to him. All the other candidates had that luxury.
So
anyway,
it even seemed like there was an obvious collusion and that these candidates, quote-unquote, had been briefed on how they were to treat Ron?
Some of the responses from the candidates seemed to me that they were rehearsed, especially Fred Thompson, where it was they already knew what the questions were. And they would have if you watch during the debate, they would ask the identical question all the way down the line, and then when it got to Ron Paul, they would change the question to something like, well, all your supporters are 9/11 truthers, are you going to refute them? Not answering any of the foreign policy questions that were asked to the other candidates. So it was highly obvious. I mean, I hope it was obvious to the people that were watching. Mm-hmm. Fox News is no friend of unbiased reporting.
Well, I think we've kind of known that. I'm really very grateful, though, to see them come out of the closet like this so that more people can see it and understand it. Because, of course, what's going to happen after this is that people are going to take a look at them and simply start to assess them differently. I've heard a suggestion that they be forced to run a thing in advance of anything that they do that points out that they're only entertainment and that they have nothing to do with the news. And I think that would be very appropriate. And that would be something actually that the revolution, because of the way that it works, could sort of enforce on them. And I think that could be interesting, too.
Yeah, I'd love to see a warning label.
Yes, definitely. A warning label so that we can all know what we're really looking at here. Now, you're from South Carolina. You live in South Carolina, and you've been very much involved in helping South Carolina understand who Ron is and, therefore, what's going to be happening in your primary, because your state is now going to have the opportunity to vote for Ron.
This is our time. It's
yes.
Showtime in South Carolina.
It's showtime. And tell us about what you've been doing there to acquaint people with who he is, what his policies are, what they mean.
Well, that's a really good question. My background, and I should have clarified this for your listening audience, my background's been in marketing and sales for a long, long time. So we went after the approach that it was all about exposures. We wanted to expose Ron's issues, where Ron stands on immigration, where he stands on health care, where he stands on foreign policy, where he stands on the Iraq War, where he stands on the Federal Reserve, and we wanted to get the most exposures possible in the shortest period of time, because I don't think anybody explains Ron better than Ron himself.
Amen.
So we've done we broached it on a lot of what some people call guerrilla marketing tactics, signs everywhere, signs. We have really dedicated people that are just sign phenomenons. I mean, they will get on their bicycle and drive a 20-mile route every day and place signs out at the intersections and everywhere we can get any kind of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
We took that. Then we've taken the approach that we've gotten involved inside the GOP, meaning that we've took up until about 3 months ago, the local Greenville GOP, which, by the way, is predicted the last, since 1980, every Republican winner has been chosen by Greenville County, South Carolina. We went in with 40, 50 Ron Paul supporters and pretty well shook the party up and down by playing the inside game and people becoming precinct captains and getting reorganized we missed a lot of that prior because it's a two-year reorganization in Greenville County for precincts.
Mm-hmm.
But we've made our presence felt there in a very big way. And I'll tell the listening audience, and you and I have talked about this before, is that if you just show up, you can impact what goes on.
Yes.
It's not that difficult. You just need to show up, and people will start to listen to what you have to say. We did the same thing in Spartanburg, and when Rick Beltram, who was a Spartanburg GOP after the first debate in Columbia where Giuliani and Ron Paul had the little spat there, made the foot-and-mouth comment that Ron Paul would never be able to darken the gates of Spartanburg County. Well, within about 48 hours of that comments and thousands of emails, Rick Beltram relented to bring Ron in. I happen to be the guy that helped put the orchestrate where we were going to have the meeting and how many people, and you know, they wanted to make it a fundraiser, and some of the folks like Eric Burke on the Ron Paul forums decided to do a spam food drive, and in about a 9-day working from there, we had over 450 people come in and see Ron with over 150 people outside the event going up and down the street that wouldn't donate the $25 to the Spartanburg GOP because of what they said to Ron. And the local reporters in the Spartanburg Herald Journal, a really good, I'm not saying a supporter, but he's been very favorable to the Ron Paul situation. Jason Spencer wrote that it was almost like a rock star event. It was a lot of fun, and I think we had 26 or 27 standing ovations, and the Spartanburg GOP had never seen any kind of activity or excitement of any campaign they've ever had in the history of their that anybody could remember that was so exciting as having Ron come in there. So we played the inside game, which we think is important, and then we've done emails and direct mail and phone calls and just knocking on doors, just anything that can get the actually, we got some folks that are doing the small ads in the paper, and they've been doing that for a little while, and now we heard that worked effectively in Iowa, so now a bunch of folks are jumping on that now, too. So, it's
so this
been
has
fun.
Been a very authentic grassroots campaign, you know, run exactly the way that, you know, the effective campaigns are run. And
yeah,
it's been run by the grassroots.
Mm-hmm. Now, about a month ago, they did hire some campaign paid staff. Brian Gentry is the state coordinator for South Carolina, super fellow, and they've been coordinating the voice message recordings and some absolutely spectacular direct mail campaign. And I told you my background was in marketing, and I've seen some direct mail campaigns that, especially in the automotive industry, and these things were better than even I anticipated with the issues all spelled out about Ron Paul. So I've had people come up and just say, look at this. This is the best, this is why I'm going to now vote for Ron Paul. So I think there's going to be a little surprise here in South Carolina, provided, you know, we get over the electronic voting issue.
Yes, and of course, that is, you know, I how did you feel about New Hampshire? You look at it, is that instructive for you about the sort of things that can happen?
Well, we knew in the background from some prior notifications that these ESNS voting systems are been decertified in other states, and we're sort of getting late in the game. But now that we saw what happened in New Hampshire, at least what we think we've seen in New Hampshire of not being that there needs to be an investigation or a recount, that we want to be proactive instead of reactive in South Carolina, and we're formulating a strategy at this short time to let the Election Commission know that we're going to be watching what's going on, and we want some documentation. We want to know who certified the machines, when they were certified, who witnessed it, and have the machines been in a secure place since the certification.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no backup in South Carolina for any paper ballots, so it's a little disturbing,
you know,
to say the least.
You know what occurred to me when I was hearing that? Because remember you heard the term the sleepover, so that they let the machine sleep over at people's houses before, you know, before they were used. I think it was in San Diego last year. Wouldn't it be funny if somebody could shackle themselves to each machine? So that, I don't know if you remember, during the 70s and 80s when natural childbirth was, you know, people wanted to give birth at home, or they went to the hospital, they wanted to be able to have their spouse there, and they had spouses shackling themselves to their wives, and so that they couldn't, you know, force them to leave, you know, the birth room. And can you imagine, wouldn't that be fun if people shackled themselves to the voting machine and said, nope, I'm staying right here?
That would be dire circumstances, but in this day and time, I don't know, really, America needs to wake up from their slumber and realize that these devices can be programmed by remote control by a cell phone blocks away or miles away to print out whatever they want as far as I'll give you an example. One of the things that jumps out at me about New Hampshire is how in the world, in a real election situation, did the percentages never change during the entire voting calculation? That's not.
Well,
that
I think we all know the answer to that.
Well, I mean, that's not real world, is it?
No,
there's
it
never
isn't
been
an
electrician.
Real world.
Yeah, where
no.
All the percentages remain the same all the way throughout the entire calculation.
That's right, and it was impossible. And when impossible things keep happening over and over and over again, either you start looking up to see if you see a star in the east. Or you look for some sort of more mundane explanation. And I think that's where people are looking now. They're looking for that more mundane explanation.
Well,
like
you and I have talked about this before. It's hard to wrap your brain around the idea that our democracy is being hijacked by electronic voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a scary thought for people.
Well, you see, I knew this was going to be happening a while back because I'd had this experience with somebody that I knew who had actually, he did the original software that went into the machines, and he built in a back door. And he was really very quite open about the fact what could be done with it. And at the time, I said, well, you know, that's kind of weird. Why would he do that? And, of course, you know, isn't it funny how sometimes our questions get answered? Oh, now I understand why he did that, I realized. It was because, you know, that way they could change the vote into whatever they wanted it to be. And,
for a fee,
you know,
for a
like
small
you said,
fee,
you can
sure.
do it remotely.
Mm-hmm.
So what plans do you have in South Carolina to make sure that doesn't happen? I mean, you're not going to shackle yourself to them because it wouldn't do any good anyway.
Well, Melinda, at this juncture, and again, we're trying to be as proactive as we can instead of waiting till it's all over. What we're want to do is on Monday is we want every commission, election commission, to receive hundreds of calls from concerned citizens, not Ron Paul supporters, but concerned citizens, to ask specific questions. Basically, four questions we want to have answered.
Mm-hmm.
When were the machines certified? If law requires that it must be within 14 days of the primary.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, who certified the machines? If it was ES&S, the manufacturer of the machines, that's just like the fox guarding the hen house.
Right.
That's unacceptable. Also, there had to be a witness to the certification, so we want to know who specifically was the witness. And then, lastly, have the machines been in a secure location since the certification? Because we have visual sightings of these machines left out in the middle of the hallway at one of the county courthouses, just out in the hallway.
Wow.
Where anybody can walk by and take about a minute and program it any way they want to. So,
so you've got a serious plan together, though, to take proactive action, and you've taken a look at what can be done, and you're doing it.
That's the approach at this point. It's still, like you and I talked about it, I'm relatively new not in enthusiasm and passion for what we're doing for Ron Paul, but in the fact that somebody could do this to our democracy is very hard to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have anything to do about it, we're not going to let it happen on my watch here in South Carolina. And with the support of all the great people in South Carolina, we're going to get to the bottom of this, and we're going to have if Ron Paul wins by actual vote, then we win. If he doesn't, then we don't. But I'm not going to let, if I have anything to do with it, I'm not going to allow anybody to steal that vote.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you read my most recent article about what might actually be driving the obvious desire of the establishment to keep him under a certain level of vote. But evidently, you know, on the 30th of January in Simi Valley, they're going to have another debate at the Reagan Library, and they'll only be inviting the top four candidates. So I suspect, and the Reagan Library, of course, is sponsoring it, but the three organizations that are responsible for overseeing that and determining what the criteria are going to be CNN, the Los Angeles Times, and Politico.com.
Hmm.
And Of course, you could see in that case why they would want to keep him in the fifth position or lower. And that's exactly what they have consistently done. They did that in Iowa, and now they did it in New Hampshire. And if you get closed out of that debate, from their perspective, I think they believe that that ends, you know, your possibility of being a candidate.
Well,
and, again, I think one, that that's
mathematically, if you take the combined of the two, even taking out the consideration of the New Hampshire recount, but if you just take the votes for New Hampshire and Iowa, Ron Paul is still ahead of Thompson and Giuliani.
Well, yes, but they would eliminate it. They would eliminate them, too, by their own criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they would have a problem doing that. It looks to me like the point is making sure that Ron doesn't make the cut no matter what happens. I don't think, and I've heard other people express this, that anybody else has been the kind of threat to them that Ron is.
Well, he's not one of the good old boys.
He is very much not one of the good old boys. Very much. Now, you know, there's been a lot of other things discussed about this campaign, and you're an activist. And in some campaigns, that would be a very different thing. But the activism in the Ron Paul campaign has brought things out that nobody imagined possible, and you have yourself put together a program that has the potential to radically change the way that the campaign functions, and that's the Ron Paul Toolbar.
Oh, yes, we're very excited about the RonPaulToolbar.com is a very simple free download that anybody that's listening can go to the RonPaulToolbar.com. It's simple, safe, secure, and it enables us to communicate that we're in a pre-launch stage right now, but we were on to almost 2,000 downloads already in the first 4 or 5 days. We are we want a communication tool where we can contact or communicate to the grassroots organization alert messages without having to go through the spam filters and through email for obvious reasons down the road. But more importantly, what we're very excited about is we have signed a contract with Yahoo that allows you to search through the toolbar in your normal day-to-day searching on the internet. And while you're searching, you're earning money for the Ron Paul campaign. This is the grassroots efforts, which means, and here's how we did it. We tried to do it as almost like a fun constitutional type thing, where there's a voting on the RonPaulToolbar.com site. You can vote for the project that you feel most passionately about, and we will take the money earned, and 50% of that will be dictated to popular vote, where you want it to go, whether it be the Ron Paul blimp or the Ron Paul Air Force or Lou Rockwell or for the Ron Paul Air Force or for Granny Warriors or Call for Paul or the Ron Paul DVD, whichever project that you feel most passionate about, you could vote for, and we'll take a percentage of the funds that are earned, and 50% of that will be directed by popular vote. The other side of it is that we do want people to help self-promote it, so we've taken the top 10 referrers. You can log in and get your own referrer ID number, and you'll be able to refer other people to download the free Ron Paul Toolbar. And those top 10 referrers will have the ability to dictate where the other 50% of the money goes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll give you an example. This is a lot of people doing a little bit, but we're looking in the next 100 days to have 100,000 free downloads in America and Canada. And if everyone searches once a day, we will have the ability to donate to the grassroots projects over $300,000 a month in projects out of a free, fun toolbar, which everyone's searching on the internet anyway.
That would be amazing. And the idea that you'd actually be able to get a sort of hub, a campaign central that can enable people to know what's going on, I think is even more amazing.
It's
because
fun.
That's something that you know, people who, you know, haven't, you know, sort of experienced the Ron Paul campaign aren't aware of just how many emails you may need to go through to find out what's going on every day. But, you know, if you have, of course, you know that. It's like, I am looking at 500 emails, and I'm going to have to go through them to figure out what's going on. And you won't have to anymore. You could just actually scroll it up there so that people could just know what's going on. And the facilitation of communications would be absolutely amazing. Now, was this, whose idea was that? Was this your idea?
Well, I wish I could say it was my idea, but it wasn't. This type of fundraising has been used for Toys for Tots and Cancer Society and a few of the other nonprofits. And we started talking to them about doing it for the Ron Paul campaign, which they are supporters, and said that they were thinking, actually what happened was we registered the term RonPaulToolbar.com about 24 hours before they were looking to register it, and found out that we already had it. So so we ended up coming to an agreement, and now we're just trying to get the finishing touches on the site. We put the site up real quick and put my story up there, and you'll see my video of introducing Ron Paul at the Spartanburg event. We also have Ron Paul Radio streaming live 24/7 if you'd like to, right from the toolbar. So we're going to make it a communication hub, but it's a lot of fun. We're going to raise a lot of money for the grassroots projects that the grassroots supporters feel most passionate about.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many different Ron Paul projects that people just come up with ideas that they're so off the wall, sometimes you can't imagine that they would work. I mean, I felt that way when I heard about the Ron Paul blimp. I said, what? How could that work? But it's fantastic.
Well, the Ron Paul blimp was in Myrtle Beach yesterday. And from our understanding, the reporters were pushing each other to see who would get to take a ride. So the Ron Paul blimp is an amazing tool.
Mm-hmm. And when people see it, of course, they want to kind of follow it and find out where it goes. It's become its own story, which is exactly the same thing that's been happening with the Granny Warriors. I mean, people are just fascinated about the story that goes along with that. And, you know, there's an analogy there, because the Ron Paul campaign is about Ron Paul, but it's also about the people who are the activists, who are sort of the engine that drives the whole, who make everything work in every different way. And there's something really very beautiful about that, I think.
Well, I've said it before, Belinda, that the Ron Paul supporters are the best of the best.
Mm-hmm. They absolutely are. And I have been incredibly impressed at how civilized and cooperative and kind they are to each other, too, which makes them very different than most of the people I ever encountered in politics, for sure. And So you've got the Ron Paul toolbar, and you're going to be making use of that, and you are putting together a plan so that you know what's going to be happening in South Carolina for the debate that will be, for the primary that's going to be happening there. And what do you anticipate, what other things are you going to be doing to make South Carolina, you know, speak the message of freedom?
Well, one of the things that we've done, we think pretty effectively, is word of mouth and neighbors talking to neighbors. It's sort of how South Carolina operates. I was born in Minnesota, grew up in New England, been down in South Carolina since the early 80s, and I will tell you that it's tough if you're not from South Carolina to be accepted. It's a very community-oriented state as a whole. We're right smack in the middle of the Bible Belt. There's a new letter that Chuck Baldwin did that we are attempting to get in every pastor's hand before the primary.
Mm-hmm.
The Bob Jones University has a tremendous impact on what goes on in politics, and that. Even though Senior has endorsed Mitt Romney, we have some staff and faculty that are very very much staunch Ron Paul supporters and appreciate his stand on the Sanctity of Life Act and not wearing his Christian values on his sleeve and talking about freedom, peace, and prosperity. And we're finding that resonates throughout the people here in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And what has it been like for you being part of the Ron Paul Revolution? I mean, everything that we do has that personal component.
Let's turn my world upside down. Actually, I get in a very enjoyable way.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, give us something that's happened to you that, you know, that really made a huge difference in your life. I mean, some way you looked at the world, that you look at it differently now, that sort of thing.
Well, I've always had a pretty good understanding of what was going on. I just was being selfish and putting my head in the sand and not realizing. But that probably the biggest thing that has shocked me concerning this whole, the last seven and a half, 8 months, is I never once thought that the news media, the American news media that we turn on our TV on, is so absolutely corrupt. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. I never would have realized that they would have gone to this extreme to force feed the American population just absolutely anything and distort everything out of whack. It almost reminds me of that quote about a newspaper and I'm not sure quite who did it, but the most truthful part of the newspaper were the ads. I think Benjamin Franklin.
Scary.
Yeah. Well, I'm almost of the opinion that the most accurate or truthful part of the news broadcast would be the advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what shocked me the most. I was of the opinion of free press, and I never thought I would see the day that they would pass out that kind of a message to the people.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of these different things, I mean, they've changed your life. They've changed all of our lives in, I think, some extremely significant ways. People who didn't believe that there was any way that the people could change things, that they could actually assert their power, you know, that they now have a different belief system about how they can be powerful and what they can do. And I think that that's also been very present in what's happening here. Because
you can't put the genie back. Yeah, the friendships that have come out of this have been more than spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people across lines people you never would have met, you never would have contacted. Now, you know, they're connected. They're connected in a sort of visceral, you know, very emotionally potent way that is going to persist.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think we've talked a little bit about the fact that the Ron Paul Revolution is not just about winning a political campaign. It's about changing the way America handles everything about it. And that's the potential that actually exists there. And have you heard people talking about
that? That's a lot like the constitutional idea of, you know, we don't need an attorney to read the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people just need to pick up their Constitution or pull a Constitution up online and read the Constitution and Declaration of Independence for yourself, and you'll see how far off base we've come as a nation.
Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, one of the things that's happening. One of the things the Ron Paul Revolution is doing is it's handing out the little copies of the Constitution, and people are reading it. For maybe the first time in their lives, they're really sitting down and reading the Constitution. And I think that's also extremely remarkable, because people are connecting with, you know, something that they had, most of them, they didn't even really get contact with it when they were in school.
Right.
And
it's
now,
a lot of people think, and I don't know about this listening audience because you invited me on the show today for the first time, think that a lot of time that the Constitution is an outdated manuscript that started our country, when it's really the blueprint divinely inspired men of God that put together the formulation to launch the greatest country in the history of mankind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we have gone off track at such a dramatic, and this has not been and you and I know this, but it's not been the last 10, 20, 30 years. This has been going on for over 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
The slight off track of things that are in the Constitution, that they studied history and knew that here were the answers.
Absolutely.
And, we just need to go back to the basics. And one of the things that I talked with at length, actually with my wife on the way back, driving back, is that Ron Paul, in all his wisdom and his studies, and I think he's one of the smartest men on the planet, talks a lot about what needs to happen. While the people like Obama are talking about painting the picture of how it should be, even though they're not talking about any issue at all, and that will come out. I mean, Obama's not ever even talked about an issue. What I'd like to see is us as grassroots supporters, in conjunction with the campaign and Ron Paul, start painting a word picture for people on what it would be like under a Ron Paul presidency, what it would be like to get your paycheck and get 100% of your paycheck in your paycheck. That first expression, that first day, that first payday when you get your check and it's all there because the IRS has been abolished. The fact that we have all our military come back home and all the families reunited. The fact that we can get our borders totally secure. The fact that we can have sound money where we have no inflation and destruction of our currency, and how people would react, or people could wake up and say, well, I don't need to have, I bring my spouse home from work, they could stay home now because I have more in my paycheck. I might be able to drive a little nicer car. I might be able to buy a little nicer house. We might be able to go on a vacation that doesn't mean we have to eat peanut butter sandwiches when we go. And what kind of impact this would happen, so we could show the world what would happen implementing what Ron Paul is professing should occur.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've sold that picture to the population as well as we should have. We're talking about what he would do, but what kind of impact will that be on our lives day to day in a Ron Paul presidency?
Well, and I think that's something that people absolutely have to hear, they have to think about, and I think that that's one of the beautiful things that Ron's giving them, and that the revolution is giving them. It's giving them possibility. It's giving them unlimited horizons where we've all been, you know, sort of living in dread for a long time now.
But I've been in the automobile industry for a long time. India just announced 2 days ago that they built a $2,500 car.
A complete car
for $2,500. The sad part is that the audio industry has over $2,500 in cost on just regulation and pollution controls.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that government regulation devices on an automobile are in excess of $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
Just for
which
to
makes
comply.
It very hard to compete. Yes, and there are lots of ways that that could be handled. Well, yeah, I think we've really gotten into some great things today, and I want to thank you for being with us. And, you know, it's actually even time for us to close, though. It certainly went fast for me. I hope it went fast for you, too.
It did. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you so much, and God bless.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. And that's our show for today, Friday, January 11th, 2007. As we do on all of our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. This is really where we want to go, and this remains the thing that unites us as Americans and gives us the vision for what it is to be America. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.